Warning, you are about to listen to the greatest radio show ever. And due to contractual obligations and to shield our airwaves and corporate licensees from any semblance of liability, responsibility, and gullibility, we must tell you the views represented on this show are not necessarily those of this station or its management. This radio show contains differing points of view on current political topics, and due to the nature of its contents, it should be heard by everyone. Thank you for listening. 3, 2, 1. Now live from the Devil Radio Studios in Madison, Wisconsin, where the political party is just beginning. Welcome to the Devil's Advocate Show. Friends proving it's never personal, only politics.
Please allow me to introduce myself.
Here is your host, Mike Crute.
Welcome to the Devil's Advocates Radio Show, TGIF, happy hour, and Dom, it gets better. Right now, happier, we welcome back the returning champ. She's Milwaukee County Corporate Counsel, Maggie Dunn. And Maggie, I would not normally comment on your wardrobe, but you are sporting a lovely Not Today Satan t-shirt. She's clearly talking to you, Dom.
Hey, Maggie Dunn.
Hey guys, yeah, this is one of my faves. I got this from a good friend, and then over the years, she just continues to give me all sorts of varieties on the Not Today Satan, including like Maybe Today Satan. I've got a whole series of that wardrobe too.
At least, Maggie, you're not sporting something from the Donald Trump NFT trading card collection.
Well, not yet. Apparently, they make great gifts, Maggie.
What? I mean, I'm sorry. It's as if he, like, you know, Silence of the Lambs style, like someone removed his skull and were like looking into his head and observing his raw id, right? Like, I'm a superhero and he's like all buff. I mean, it's almost worth buying if they weren't so ridiculously expensive. So I think I'll just stick with the Trump toilet paper.
Well, it's all of that with freaking laser beams coming out of his eyes.
Literally, like, if we had to do like top five of my favorite things this week, that is number one, probably. Number two, followed shortly thereby, the okay buttons that are now being sported by some of the House Republicans, which is supposed to mean only Kevin in response to the never McCarthy folks. But everybody's like, yeah, did no one think that it's just sort of affirming the wah, wah, that it's Kevin McCarthy?
Maggie Dunn, you know, I know it's really next week's news, but I'm looking forward to the most Monday, January 6 hearings going live on the Civic Media Network, high noon, and also the report being released, 8 chapters and a synopsis. They're going to drop the evidence, my understanding, on Wednesday. But Maggie Dunn, criminal referrals reportedly by Politico, 3 criminal referrals to the DOJ. And I know it's only about as good as the paper it's written on, but it is a bipartisan thing, and it's the first time, my understanding, other than a few statements by federal judges, speculation sort, but the first time the former president has been criminally accused, you know, outside of the greatest radio show ever.
Yeah, it's about time, right? I, for one, will be on vacation all of next week, so we'll be devouring this in detail and absolutely listening to Civic Media's live coverage starting at noon, 100%. Really curious to see exactly how they present the information. I think we know and have a very good idea of who those criminal referrals will be about. But as with all things in the January 6th committee and with all things writ large politically, right, it's the manner of presentation that really matters. And so do they build a compelling case, or does this look much more like the Robert Mueller kind of dry, unsexy?
No, I hope not, right?
If we learned anything, it's don't leave it up to Bill Barr to sort of do the spin doctoring, like make it really clear, make it understandable to all. And I hope they do that.
Folks, you're listening to the Devil's Advocates Radio Show. Our pal, Maggie Dunn, Milwaukee County Corporate Counsel and friend of the Devil's, joining us on this Friday. Thank you for doing so, Maggie. I want to get on that, but I want to harken back just a moment to the Trump cards, if we can for a second. Forbes is reporting that the digital trading cards, they have sold out, netting $4.4 million. So, I mean, if this is a business proposition, you got to think, given the very limited cost of making these things, he's going to make some money. But here's the other part about this, Maggie and Crudy. How is this, you know, the Republicans bitch all the time about Hunter Biden. Oh, Hunter Biden's got art and he's selling his art. And who's buying the art? And who's paying for the art? And, you know, how do you value art? Isn't that just a way to potentially, I don't know, launder money, for example? Well, does this seem like it'd be something that would fit the bill? If you're trying to give stash some money over to a guy like Trump, wouldn't this be a way to do it, Maggie Dawn?
Yeah, but P.T. Barnum is cheering from his grave, right? Like, there's a sucker born every minute. And we know that every knuckle dragging, like, no gray matter having MAGA hat sporting Republican is out there giving these things away to their entire weird rednecky families for the holidays. I mean, yeah, that would clearly work here too. I mean, both things can be true, right? I always believe in the theory of not or, but and. So, like, yes, there is $4.4 million worth of MAGA suckers out there, and all of his, you know, co-conspirator criminal types that want to just launder money to get him some funding so he can pay for the criminal referral and all the manner of other legal catastrophes that await DJT. Yep, that too as well. And by the way, we could do in a complete hour on how the uber rich, and I'm talking like the 0.1 of the 1% globally, buy priceless works of art and then actually put them in tax no man's lands, which are basically these like aircraft freight things in international airports, because effectively it's not in a taxable jurisdiction. But again, I've gone way down the rabbit hole here on some legal minutiae and financial frauds, but returning to the point, yes, indeed, I think it's probably both.
You know, I think of Cousin Eddie from Christmas Vacation. It's the gift that keeps on giving, Clark. I think a perfect gift might be, not today, CJ. He's waiting in the wings, but we're not taking him.
We've got a whole new merchandising angle, Mike. Perfect.
You are listening to the Devil's Advocates Radio Show. We're not even selling you anything. We're giving it away for free. Best price ever. We got the best guest ever. She's our good friend, Maggie Dawn, Milwaukee County Corporate Counsel. And Maggie, I'm just glad you're here. So let me just say that. I don't even have any questions, just observations. I'm happy you're here. Because I was getting so sick of Dom.
The travails of DJT, as you brought up, Maggie, lots of headwind for him, lots of grand juries, apparently even a new one I read about here recently this week, perhaps has been impaneled. But of the various criminal and civil cases that are going on against the president right now, what's your sense of the most direct, and not necessarily the quickest, but perhaps the quickest route to justice, given the different cases?
I think the documents case, it's like so clear, like, don't take this stuff. It belongs to the United States government. He took the stuff. They asked for it back for months and months and months. He swore up and down that he had given all the stuff. He hadn't. I mean, I don't know how much more open and shut of a case you can get.
But I think
that poses the most real and imminent criminal threat. It doesn't have the greatest potential penalty.
Well, Maggie, it's you know, it will be rationalized away as paperwork crimes. And I don't disagree with you. What about my thought, perhaps a state level charge coming out of the state of Georgia, where he cannot be pardoned by a future Republican president? That's my thought. That would be the best worst thing that could happen to Donald Trump.
Yeah, that's 100% right when you're thinking about pardonability. Of course, Georgia continues to elect Republican governors, right?
They don't have clemency there. They can't pardon.
They don't.
No, they do not.
That's, Folks, make a note. It is 5:15 on Friday, December 16th, and I learned something from Mike Curdy today.
I learned that from Evan.
From Evan yesterday, yes. Apparently, Georgia, one of three states that actually has like a five-person board that does not allow the governor to directly pardon, although the governor can appoint to the board, probably in staggered, you know, jobs. Yes, technically Georgia does not have that. So that is, but my question, and to your point, I mean, which one is quick? What's the first conviction, right? And I would imagine that if there's evidence on all of these things, they will all come down in due course. But and Crudy makes a great point, to be able to have a state charge on this level, that a Republican, future Republican president, like DeSantis doing a deal with Trump to get the mega votes, you know, something like that, that would limit that. We've been critical, Crudy a little more so than I, on Alvin Bragg, the DA out of Manhattan, and the criminal charges against the Trump corporation are now, and we've known, we've talked about those, but there could be more charges coming out of that. That would also be, Maggie, on a state level if something like that goes down.
Yeah, it's been really interesting watching what's happened in the Manhattan DA's office, right? It was the new DA came in and it was sort of like, we're probably not going to continue with these prosecutions or even with potentially continuing to seek evidence and build a case and impanel a grand jury. Now that's sort of flip-flopped. You're wondering, like, what exactly is going on? Like, what's the litmus test there? There were a number of former prosecutors in that DA's office that basically spoke out publicly and said, yeah, these are tough cases because they're complex, right? But there was no question in their mind, these assistant district attorneys that spoke out publicly, longtime employees of the Manhattan DA's office, they basically left because they were upset about it. So it's interesting to see effectively this flip-flop, like what's motivating that.
Yeah.
But yeah, I would suggest, you know, the overwhelming verdict that you saw in the trial of the Trump Organization as to the tax crimes, right, was fascinating and certainly makes a predicate case, sets an example, in other words, that, boy, yeah, tax fraud's a crime. Again, we get to Mike's point about it being paperwork crime.
Well, let me point out some new reporting on the paperwork crime. Apparently, he kept the classified documents in the pool storage area accessible by all the guests at Mar-a-Lago. So, you know, how big a deal could it have been? Come back with us. She's a really big deal. She's Maggie Dunn, Milwaukee County Corporate Counsel. Not today, Satan. That's what she has to say. Come back with us. We'll give her the next word.
Every rose has its thorn.
Warning, listening to the Devil's Advocates may expose you to opposing views.
And we are back. Thank you for listening to the Devil's Advocates radio show. We will take some calls later in the show at 844-967-2789. But right now we got our pal Maggie Dunn, Milwaukee County Corporate Counsel, joining us this Friday. Maggie, thanks for coming around. Always great to see you.
Oh, can't hear Maggie.
Where's Maggie? Go ahead, Maggie.
Oh,
the old unmute on the Zoom.
Oh, yes, yes. The technology. We get the kids to work on it for you.
Maggie, I got to ask you, do you use the Twitter? And what do you think about the new guy in charge, Elon Musk? He's now banning journalists, but he has replaced Mike Lindell to his esteemed place on the Twitterverse. I suspect the former president will join him there shortly, but Mike Lindell celebrates Twitter reinstatement with a call to melt down the voting machines. Welcome back, Mike.
Yeah. Amplify Mike Lindell, right? Like not black or brown voices, but Mike Lindell. That's
yes,
really
we need more Mike out there.
It's really been, after coming to the county, right, and becoming a manager of a lot of people, I've spent a whole heck of a lot of time thinking about what it is to try to not just manage people, but help people feel some sort of value and attachment, engagement with their work, right? Because in the public sector, it's not like I can give people bonuses. We can't fire people on whim, right?
There's you can't.
You know?
What fun's that?
And we enjoy civil service protected. So thinking about how you motivate people, especially during this period of time when so many governmental servants just get cracked on, right? In the media and sort of reputationally, especially in this state. Thank you, Scotty Walker. And basically, you look at Elon Musk and it's as a manager and an owner, a CEO of a company, it's basically like he took a management textbook and said to himself, I know I'll do everything that they say not to do in the biggest way humanly possible. And to boot, he's just a complete relativist, right? Like all of the nonsense that comes out of his mouth about this needs to be a basically free speech platform with minimal guardrails that deal and address with effectively incitements to violence and extraordinary hate speech. That's all baloney. It's complete BS. He has no moral mooring at all. It's basically like he's fangirling himself. You get that sense? Like this is just all a big ego exercise.
Yes.
We're whopping $44 billion. I hope the whole thing implodes. And, you know, but let's say Black Twitter. Like, let's just keep Black Twitter. The rest of it can go. I'm shocked at how completely incapable of any self-awareness he is, or if he does have some, just doesn't care.
My understanding.
Did you see that he appeared with Dave Chappelle? Did you see this? Dave Chappelle brought him on stage, introduced him as the richest man in the world. And I was like, why would you do this? You're basically like hated by anybody that has a couple of gray cells to rub together. It's incredible. Just the huge, the level of audacity of Mr. Musk. Really incredible.
Well, that's the part I admired about him. Go ahead.
Didn't Musk, and I have to look it up, but when he was on stage with Chappelle, did he do the I'm Rich Bitch, which was, of course, a Chappelle play on what, Rick James or somebody? I'm not one of the characters that Chappelle would play. But literally, I mean, Elon Musk gets up there. I mean, talk about a total lack of self-awareness. And he kind of, to me, replaced Trump as this weird, egomaniacal, you know, never satiated, inconsistent, you know, just blabbermouth.
It's like they're competing for the world's biggest
D-Bag award.
Here, right? I mean, like neck and neck coming. Here they come around the bend. Maybe they'll be Elon Musk trading cards. Maybe those are next. If you're listening, Elon, please do trading
cards. Who needs trading cards? He bought Twitter. I mean, what are Pokemon cards relative to Twitter?
Well, I mean, if he's losing the money the way he's losing at Tesla right now, he just sold like $3 billion of stock. I mean, talk about selling at the bottom, you know. I mean, I to study a little bit of economics, Maggie Dawn, but that's not a way to do it, right?
I think that's like thing one in like biz 101 class is like, buy high, sell low, way to riches and fame. Like, here's one. So, yeah, if you take it from it, he does everything that is the complete opposite of what any good people manager should ever do, right? He does it in an economically completely backward way. He's complete moral relativist. He doesn't hold himself to the same standards that he appears to try to hold other people to. And he's a giant goober. Like this pasty blah, like bleh. Like everything about the guy makes me want to vomit. From what he says to the way he looks, the way he behaves, it's all gross. And like, can you imagine being in the same room with this guy? Like this skeevy vibe that just radiates this man. Ugh.
You know, I was just hopeful he's been investing in the FTX exchange.
Right, like Sam Bankman-Fried, if you could deliver us one thing for the holidays, please, please let it be that Elon Musk socked billions into your stupid cryptocurrency.
Well, you know, right. I always thought perhaps I was just being naive or boomer-like in that I didn't understand the value of crypto. I didn't see any inherent worth in fake money. And what do you know? It was a Ponzi scheme. and I feel like I've been vindicated, at least within my household, to my teenager, if nowhere else. But, you know, for a while, it seemed like up is the only way it could go until it goes down.
Anyone who's been on the planet for more than 5 minutes, no offense to your teenager or all the other 20-somethings that were telling me that I was a grandma because I thought it was bogus. It's like nothing ever just infinitely increases in value. It's the most perfect fertile ground for a Ponzi scheme, right? Because you're not tying it back to anything. It's monopoly money in cyberspace, basically. It, you know, we could have a very philosophical conversation about what.
Not right now. We can't. We got to say goodbye, sister. You're the only thing. Your friendship grows infinitely in value. It's priceless. But we got to go. Merry Christmas.
Happy holidays, everybody.
We'll talk to you soon. Be well. More Devil's Advocates. The happier happy hour continues.
My Satan sense is tingling.
Well, that's definitely a pleasurable sensation.
The Devil's Advocates. Never personal, only politics.
Welcome back to the Devil's Advocates Radio Show, the Friday edition. It's getting better right now. We got a fine guest who's joined us live via Zoom. He's our aggressive tweeting buddy, Scott Ross. Scott, you know, we've used that as a recent moniker for you. I don't know that you have a official title other than Friend of the Devil, but aggressive tweeter since Elon Musk, dude. I have not tweeted since Elon Musk bought the platform. What's your take on that?
Well, he's just a clown from Clown Town, and it just goes to show that you can't buy smarts, no matter if you're once were the richest man in the world or are wherever the hell he is right now. But yeah, he's just a clown. But, you know, again, who would have thought that, like, you know, racism and anti-Semitism would have exploded on a platform owned by a guy who owes his fortune to his daddy, a South African apartheid diamond mine owner, you know, inheriting him his money and going on to Tesla, which he did not found, contrary to what some people may think. So, yeah, so it is an S show, as they say over there. Now he's banning journalists. And again, I'll say this, like I've never been one of those people, you know, the Republicans do it all the time, but they claim when like private companies, you know, make decisions about communications or people are held accountable by private corporations for their communications. They call it an attack on the First Amendment, which is garbage. We know that only the government can impede the first, you know, only government can inflict punishment upon the First Amendment, not private companies, as distasteful as their activities might be so far. So I would think that there would have to be something though. You know, I was reading about it, you know, some sort of Federal Trade Commission violation with what he is doing to, you know, to this, you know, multinational communication vehicle. But that's for people who are lawyers to figure out. And I am not one of those.
I hear the EU may do something, but anyways, care a lot less about Twitter than our relationship with you, Scott Ross. It's been too long, man. Happy holidays. You know what I'm really looking forward to this great Christmas week ahead? Well, on Monday, there's going to be a January 6th committee hearing, sort of a bonus overtime special for us, Scott. And I understand they're going to drop the January 6th report on Monday up to the episode. And I'm really, really curious about the very last guy, supposedly that gave testimony, Robin Voss. I'd like to see the transcripts. Might have to wait till Wednesday, but that'd be a hell of a Christmas surprise for me and the whole great state of Wisconsin, Scott. What do you think he said about Trump and the pressure campaign to decertify the 2020 election?
I mean, if he's honest, you know, he'd say exactly what happened in the way in which this, you know, multi-state effort to overturn the results of a democratically decided election, which included, you know, among other people, the wife of a Supreme Court Justice, Ginny Thomas. And so I will be interested absolutely to see what's in there. You know, Voss clung to Trump as much as he possibly could. I mean, there was that famous little picture of the two of them sidling up in some plane when Voss scurried, and that is the appropriate word, scurried to Mar-a-Lago to speak with Trump after they were having some conflicts. So I am definitely excited to see what's in there. And I for sure, I am guessing that, any of the, you know, potential prosecutions, the scope of it won't be as long as the three of us might be as wide as the three of us might like. But I think it's important. I mean, it's absolutely important for the Department of Justice and Merrick Garland to hold these people accountable for what they did, which is, again, commit basically treason and try and overturn the results of a democratically decided election through skullduggery and in some instances violence. Because if you don't, you know, you never reinforce an undesired behavior, but if you don't stop them, if people are not prosecuted, people who matter are not prosecuted for committing these crimes, they'll do it again. You know, we saw it I don't want to go off on a tangent here, but when the Obama administration didn't punish anybody in the Bush administration for either the economic collapse, for the war crimes, for the lying us into the Iraq war, any of those things, for the corruption, you know, it just was opened the door to the next time there was a Republican in there, that being Trump, opening the door to even more massive crimes. So that's, I think that's the real challenge, that if you don't create that disincentive for committing crimes, there are criminals will commit crimes, you know, and if we can do it for the mom, you know, the single mom struggling on welfare assistance in Milwaukee, who may get more childcare credit than she should have. And there's a 4-day series on it in the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel and on the local Milwaukee TV. I think you can hold elected officials and folks like that accountable for committing criminal acts against this great nation.
Scott Ross, our good friend. Scott, I certainly think there probably were some criminal co-conspirators from the state of Wisconsin. I just look at the list of the false Trump electors. But I'd like to draw a small distinction. Technically, Robin Voss could be the victim of a crime here. He could be the victim of the pressure campaign from Donald Trump. And let's not forget, Trump came to Wisconsin. Trump endorsed Adam Steen, nearly got the guy beat in the primary. And subsequently, Voss has come out and purged Janelle Branchon from the Assembly Elections Committee. Is it possible that victim Robin Voss got his vengeance in sworn testimony? I think it's far more likely that he told the truth or something close to it.
We'll see. You know, again, we'll see. I mean, my experience with Robin Voss in terms of testimony and that sort of thing is he had to testify in our Twitter lawsuit against that we ran against him when speaking of Twitter before, when we successfully argued in federal court that he had violated the government open records laws of the state of Wisconsin by blocking One Wisconsin Now actually the First Amendment was a federal judge. That he had, you know, he had violated our constitutional rights by blocking us on Twitter because it was a government account. I'm guessing that Voss probably told, you know, probably was inclined to tell the truth, being under oath, and that he had a little bit of an axe to grind. But like I don't see Voss as the victim in any of this. You know, he rode this train, you know, throughout the last 15 years. And so if that station ends up in a place that he doesn't like, he's only got himself to blame for that. And yes, that was a segue, Mike.
Well done, Scott Ross, our friend. But let's, of course. I mean, Voss is trying to get it all ways all the time. That's how he rolls. And he's been pretty good at it. Let's not forget, he appointed Gableman, right? I mean, what kind of a fiasco was that? So he tried to appease Trump, which you can never do. He tried to, you know, hang on to those voters, which you can never do, because they're going to do what Trump wants. And then he's fighting within his own party here. And, you know, I live in the Wisconsin Senate 8th District, and Janelle Branchon apparently is going to run as one of those Republicans, along with some other folks that signed the letter. Dan Canole is one of the 15 that signed the letter to Mike Pence the day before the riotous insurrection, asking him not to certify the election. So we have lots of those people in the Republican Party. And, of course, on the national level, Scott, McCarthy's, you know, fighting for Speaker of the House, and he's kind of beholden to Marjorie Taylor Greene. I mean, how does this person come up to have the influence that she has in Crazy Town? Scott, it seems to me the Republican Party is a disarray.
Yes. I, you know, there is a lot of chaos over on the other side of the fence. That's for sure. You know, I mean, I guess the real challenge is here that we have come to a place where we have two separate realities which exist. We have the reality where science and mathematics rule, you know, the one that we all and most of the people in the United States live in. And then you have the Fox News, OAN, Newsmax, Dan O'Donnell, right wing, you know, Looney Tunes place where like they simply the reality doesn't exist. And they are a chamber which operates basically in a vacuum. And that's why I think we see, you know, you see the evidence that that's not working are when you see things like, you know, we're all waiting for the latest caravans to be coming up from Central America right before the election, which seems to, you know, coincide with every time there's an election, Fox News starts yammering about that. The challenge is that the mainstream media then feels like they have to address that, you know, so they're winning. So the right is winning by virtue of getting the regular mainstream media to pick up on things that simply have no basis in fact, so it shouldn't even be argued. Like getting to have that argument exist is the Republicans winning, you know, by virtue of that. So I mean, that's the problem, is that there is this alternative reality which exists where people, you know, share ideas and beliefs about things that really don't operate in the known universe, but they continue. I mean, you know, television. I mean, we're all radio fans, but television is, as Howard Beale said, is the most awesome GD force in the whole godless world, because you can just sit there and have it like come into you. You know, you are seeing it, you are hearing it. It's stimulating all those, you know, motor neurons in your brains. The problem is that, you know, as long as that stuff exists to pollute people's brains, their brains are going to be polluted because it's such a passive, you know. It's such a passive activity.
And now you can get it on demand on your phone, man. So, you know, there's really no limit to it. And you can wormhole down anything. If you want it, you can search for it. You'll find it. All right. But in that sense, though, we have some new leadership here in the state of Wisconsin. Brian Shimmy, now the GOP chair. And I saw on Washington Post, Mark Thiessen wrote an op-ed about Gallagher up in the Green Bay area as an up-and-coming Republican. We have new leadership in Wisconsin and a sharp young lad up in Green Bay. Is that bode well for us, Scott?
I don't think at all, because every time that the opportunities existed for, you know, Mike Gallagher to stand up to his party and this craziness, when things actually matter, you know, around election time, around the time when important legislation is passing, he cowers and can't be found. You know, this guy, you know, that's a thing. Like him and Brian Stile are so embodiment of Paul Ryan, which is this, you know, wealthy white guys who get a free pass because, like, you know, Milwaukee media likes them because they're, you know, young, handsome Republicans. I mean, that's just the way it is. They, you know, Paul Ryan, precious Paul Ryan, was like the sacred cow of Wisconsin politics. He could not be, you know, you could not talk poorly about him by virtue of, I don't know why, you know, I mean, I don't understand what he had, you know, because of the three post offices he got named while he was, you know, during his 20 years in the House. But I think that's a challenge. I mean, the thing is that Democrats have to be going after these guys, because if you're not creating that contrast in the media is just going to report one side. Like Democrats need to get off their butts and they need to start going after the House members, you know, with radio, with communications, with rapid response, with press releases, with elected officials going after them on the Democratic side, in the first congressional district against Brian Stile, in the third congressional district against Looney Tune terrorist insurrectionist Derek Van Orton, in the seventh against Tom Tiffany, and then certainly in the eighth against Mike Gallagher, because that guy's all but declared. I mean, that column you read by Mark Thiessen, who, let's not forget, Mark Thiessen was the author of Scott Walker's unreadable tome, unconscionable, no, unintimidated. Yeah. That guy's all but declared that he's going to run against Tammy Baldwin in 2024.
Yeah.
And if I just may, one little segue or one little side note here. Back in 2013, when Unintimidated came out, I was supposed to be on MSNBC to talk about it and give my review of it. And so I had purchased it. Okay. And it was sitting in my house. And I left my house to go to the gym. And I came back 40 minutes later, which tells you how long I was at the gym. And I had left my back window open and someone broke into my house and stole my iPad, which was underneath my copy of Unintimidated, but they left the copy of Unintimidated.
Scott Ross, do you recall when the, let's call them the sing-along people, where they went and they were the truly unintimidated ones? Do you know they went to press with a book entitled Unintimidated before Scott Walker got to press? And Tammy Baldwin was in studio one day, and I said, which Unintimidated book would you prefer? Folks, you are
my contribution to the literature was I went over to Barnes & Noble at the Easttown Mall, and I put all Walker's copies in the new fiction section when they came out.
There was fiction
and
that book. I could tell you chapter and verse. Scott Ross, you got more time for us, man? You sticking around?
Sure.
Friday Absolutely. Grievances with Scott Ross, our good buddy. An aggressive tweeter, but in the Unintimidated book, Ghost, written by Mark Thiessen about Scott Walker's fantasy life, he claims up in La Crosse he was surrounded by protesters and they shook the car and he was fearful for his life. And I called friends in the media in La Crosse and they said that never happened. Yeah. It never happened. Yeah. Not like sort of, maybe. No, never happened. Come back, more Devil's Advocates. We're for real, I promise.
Just because he says it doesn't make it true.
The suspense is terrible. I hope it'll last.
Think you know politics? Think again. Welcome to the Devil's Advocates.
And we are back. Thank you for listening to the Devil's Advocates radio show. If you missed any of this fine program, go to civicmedia.us. Click on the Devil's Advocates tab for podcasts and interviews.
Our good friend Scott Ross aggressively tweeting and talking here on the Devil's Advocates on a Friday afternoon. Scott, I've got to turn it to the backyard politics just for a few minutes. There is a special election happening for Dom's representation in the Wisconsin State Senate. And apparently Alberta Darling, she's out. She resigned. And at least the Dems finally got someone to run. But it is a cavalcade of Republicans. Scott, what's your opinion of the field of Republicans seeking Alberta Darling's seat?
Well, I mean, you know, when one of the more formative elected officials in the race is a guy who was run out of office for having sex with a Republican staffer, you can see the
quality.
Thank you very much.
The quality. Come on, Hopper married that girl.
I mean, I remember because I was still working at OWN when Randy Bedhopper was the talk of the town and in the recalls and such, and he got run out by Jess King. One of the three successful recall elections that Democrats had during the Walker uprising. The thing is that these races, by and large, it's either going to be Kenota or it's going to be Branchon, because these races, almost, I would say 99.9% of the races, when it's a primary for a Senate seat, a member of the legislature is running, an assembly person, they win the primary. You know, it's because of name ID or whatever it is. You know, it's why here in Dane County, whenever there's a new assembly race, it's usually a county board supervisor who wins. You know, if a county board supervisor gets into the primary, because they just, you know, they have the name ID. Not that it's huge, but, you know, so that's, you know, and there's Kenota, who's a clown car. And then you've got Branchon, who's just like, I mean, she would be the best for the Democrats because, you know, terrorist insurrectionist is like still not thought of as a good thing. You know, the things that she did. The fact is that Voss wants her out of the caucus. So, you know, which, much like Adam Jarkow. So maybe she'll get across the line and then lose like Jarkow did against spacing on her name, Patty Shockner. So we'll see.
Scott Ross, based on that logic, how about the Wisconsin Supreme Court race? We've obviously got the Scott Walker former appointee, Dan Kelly, who got his ass handed to him by Jill Karofsky, 163,000 votes, I believe. And then suddenly the glamorous celebrity judge from the Waukesha parade trial, Doro, got in the race. Well, she's got some name recognition. She's got some celebrity. that's all it's really going to take, I think. Although apparently she's on the wrong side of the bail issue, Scott. The same thing they eviscerated Mandela for, are they going to go after her for? And would you say the Republican Party will then be in disarray?
Well, I mean, this is the thing. The dynamics of this race are different from any Supreme Court race we have ever had in the state of Wisconsin. And that's because, at least going back to when there were actual, you know, maybe 30 years ago, there were races that were competitive, but they weren't paid attention to and they didn't spend a lot of money. Right. So for the past like 25 years, going back to like 1997, at least, you know, the Supreme Court races have been, you know, the primaries are a Dem and a Republican, or two Dems and a Republican. And WMC comes in a week and a half before the election, spends $500,000 to $1 million in positive ads for the Republicans. So the Republicans' name ID goes up. They get between 46 and 48%. And then the media for the next like 6 weeks till the general election is like, you know, Judge R, who got 48% in the primary, and Judge D, who got 33% in the primary. You know what I mean? So like, this is a this is a dynamic which has never existed, where there are two Republicans in it, and you've got big spenders. You know, you've got the Hendrixes are already on the side of racist Dan Kelly. We'll see. I mean, does
no the U line
the Hendricks on the U lines. You see if Hendricks gets behind. I mean, it's going to be a fascinating race, and it's for all the marbles. I mean, if the Dems win this, it could change, you know, so much of the lawlessness of the Republicans in the legislature and Governor Walker and Scott Walker were codified by a Republican controlled Supreme Court. And so much of that could get tossed if the progressives are successful. And it is for all the marbles. It's all hands on deck. You know, I mean, there should be nothing else that people are focusing on the Democratic side. Albeit, I know they got to write a budget, but put two people in a room and write a budget. Have everybody else in the Democratic thing should be working on this until the April general election.
Yeah, absolutely. Great point. Scott Ross, our fine guest for just a couple more minutes. The respect for Mayor, before we get to that, I also want to mention Scott Walker's kid is the campaign manager for Kelly's campaign, to my understanding.
Well, then you got two people coming together who have had a lot of experience in writing concession speeches. It's going to hum on election night.
Scott, a good week. The Respect for Marriage Act finally passed, but not thanks to, you know, Senator Ron Johnson here in the state of Wisconsin. I know you've been critical of some of the other Republicans on this. I want to give you the last couple of minutes here to opine on your thoughts regarding, you know, Derek Van Orden, Ron Johnson, Wisconsin Law and Liberty, of course, the former governor, Scott Walker.
Yeah, I mean, you know, listen, it's very clear. I mean, if you look at what's happened with LGBTQIA rights in the last like 15 years, it got to the point where like where people accepted gay marriage, right? It was the Supreme Court made gay marriage legal, same-sex marriage legal. But what has happened when it comes to trans people and the attack from alleged parents' rights groups, you know, those bottom-feeding scumbags, the Moms for Liberty and whatever the hell, Scarlett Johnson, her group, I can't remember. If you've been following any of this stuff, and again, in and around the 8th Senate District.
Yes.
You know, I mean, that's interesting. Because like they've been rejected for the most part at the election box when, you know, with things they have tried to do. But like those bottom feeders go to those meetings. They, you know, I don't know if you saw, there was one where like the Germantown Library had a Pride Month display, and a trans teenager put a display up 2 years ago. No problem. Put it up last year. Those people went crazy. And so as a result, the library decided it was going to get rid of having displays so that it didn't have to deal with the controversy of saying that gay people and trans people should be treated like human beings, you know? So they're not going to stop. The Journal Sentinel, you know, is doing a disservice to the people of Wisconsin in the way that they have covered these groups and these individuals, Scarlett Johnson and the Moms for Liberty, with these gauzy profiles after they lost. And so I would ask them to stop doing that. You know, we have to stop platforming, you know, people who want to take away other people's rights in such a despicable way. That's just my own beef with it. The challenge is that like these people have a microphone. They have a really large microphone. we have to beat them with shoe leather and with our tenacity.
Well, that or Derek Van Orden's going to have to come to your library and check out all the books. Scott Ross, Merry Christmas. Happy holidays. We'll catch up with you soon. Thank you so much for coming around. We got Maggie Dawn, Milwaukee County Corporate Counsel, joining us for the Happier Happy Hour.
Thanks, Scott.